Falconry, or hunting with birds, possibly goes back to the end of the Ice Age or even before, and it was common in ancient civilizations. Falconers traditionally worked with trained birds of prey to hunt game together and share the spoils. Today, for people like author Cy Montgomery, this sport is more about the joy of interacting with the birds themselves. Cy has written 29 books for children and adults, most about animals and the people who engage with them. Her latest is The Hawk's Way, Encounters with Fierce Beauty. In it, Cy tells of learning the art of falconry from her mentor, Nancy Cowan, from feeding these birds with parts of frozen baby chicks to understanding hawk psychology. Cy joined me for a live discussion as part of the Living on Earth Book Club and an event sponsored by New Hampshire Audubon and New Hampshire Public Radio. I asked her to describe how she felt the first time a hawk perched on her arm.
It was like holding a waterfall or a lightning storm or an eclipse on your glove. When Jazz, the first hawk to land on my falconry glove, landed, I was shocked at how heavy she was. I was shocked at the squeeze of her strong yellow feet. I was completely filled up with the splendor and the wildness of this creature, like wildness itself had come out of the sky to me.
I gotta confess, I wasn't sure about this book because Cy is famous as a vegetarian. And this book about the way hawks operate, it's about as far from vegetarian as you want to get. And in this book, you have the heads of these baby chicks are being chopped off, their legs are being chopped off, their hearts are being pulled out to become food for hawks in training. So one of the recurring themes in this book is how your vegetarianism, you know, and your interest in falconry, I mean, like you're at war with yourself this, right?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, my God.
The last person you would think would practice falconry. If I found there was a steak on my plate, I would push it away. But when you're in the company of one of these magnificent birds, what you have is glory. What you feel is their hunger and their delight. What you feel is their, there's a word in falconry for their desire to hunt, and it's called yarak. And it's such an ancient word, no one really knows for sure where it came from. But a hawk lives to hunt, not just to eat. A hawk wants to chase and capture even more than it wants to eat. And that glorious desire, seeing that desire unfold and be fulfilled, that animal's joy could become mine. And to be able to understand or even come close to touching a mind so different from my own.
To somehow enter the heart and mind of a hawk.
Well, isn't this what we want? Isn't this what we always want with everyone? You know, with our friends and with our family and with the animals that you see. You want to know, what's it feel like to be you? I think it was kind of soul cleansing for me to let go of so much that was about me. It wasn't about me. It was about joining them and respecting that ancient drive and desire that hawks have, which really goes all the way back to the dinosaurs, because as you know, birds are dinosaurs. And all the dinosaurs went extinct 65 million years ago, except for the ones who fly. And when you have one of these creatures on your arm, you're holding a dinosaur right there. They're not just descendants of the dinosaurs. They're descendants of a very small wing of the dinosaur clan, the theropod dinosaurs, the meat-eating dinosaurs.
From the little, from the Velociraptor to the, dare I say, the Tyrannosaurus?
That's right. That's right. It's just like T-Rex. Yeah. And, you know, T-Rex, when he hatched out of the egg, he was covered in down.
Yeah. Yeah. Let me ask you a general question about birds and captivity. How do you feel about people keeping birds in captivity?
It's hard to keep a bird in captivity and keep it happy. It's hard to keep a lot of animals in captivity and keep it happy. The thing about falconry hawks, though, is if your hawk doesn't like you, it will fly away and you will not see it again because you don't just keep them on a string. Your hawk can disappear, and this happens. And I read, I think this was in one of Steve Bodio's excellent books, A Rage for Falcons, that he knows of wild hawks that would come out of the woods, never had any jesses on their feet, had never been in captivity, and would join a hunter because the hunter makes a good junior hunting partner. So if that person will scare up game, the hawk figures out, bam, you know, this is someone I want to stick around with. And my falconry instructor, Nancy Cowan, was very clear that this is a voluntary association, that your hawk will just disappear if you don't measure up. And you can even be nice to the hawk and like the hawk, but if you're a lousy hunting partner, they're out of there.
So in this process of falconry, actually, you're working for the hawk. Mm-hmm. You're the servant, you're the assistant, helping, but the hawk is in charge.
Totally in charge. And you cannot break their rules. All the rules are their rules. Nancy was very clear about this. And sometimes they will have rules that you don't understand at all, but they'll let you know when you broke them. Nancy had this one incident. Her husband, Jim Cowan, was a master falconer from whom she learned the art of falconry. And he had several hawks, and she had her hawks, his and her hawks. And one day it was their anniversary. She was all dressed up. Jim got home late. He wanted to take a shower before they went out to dinner. So he said, oh, would you feed my goshawk? Oh, sure, new goshawk. Tell me what you usually do. He says, you present the first chick, goshawk eats it. Present the second chick, goshawk eats it. Present the third chick, goshawk eats it. You turn around, you leave. Fine. So she does this. First chick goes fine. Second chick goes fine. Third chick is fine. She turns to leave, and then the goshawk flew at her face and stuck his talon almost through her eyeball. This was a bad anniversary. So she was very annoyed when Jim finally emerged from the shower, and she wanted to know, what didn't you tell me? What did you forget to tell me? And the reason the goshawk had attacked her was that usually after the third chick, he would reach out and fluffle, fluffle, fluffle on the bird's chest. That was the routine. And she had not done the routine. And so the bird instantly felt like, ooh, something's really wrong. I got to go for the food. And went for her face. And the amazing thing, though, was that she was mad at Jim. She wasn't mad at the hawk, because that's just what they do. So you've got to learn not to make a mistake. And if you make a mistake, you can pay. So, you know, I was very, very careful with these birds. Another reason that you're careful is, more importantly than you don't want to get hurt, these birds, although they're tremendously strong, and some of them, like the peregrine, can fly down like a lawn dart at 240 miles an hour, even though they have immense strength in their feet and their bills, and they have all these amazing superpowers, they're quite delicate, actually. And just if you have a hawk on your glove, just a funny little wind can lift a wing and hurt that hawk. If you're walking through the forest trying to get some game, and you fall, and that bird falls into, you know, a twig that pokes in its eye, your bird can be blind. You can kill your bird with a mistake. So you got to be really careful that you do everything right.
So how do you get these hawks? How do you get these predators that you then become the junior partner of?
Well, I never had a hawk at our house. I kind of had to choose between the hawk and my marriage. So my husband, Howard, considered a hawk like having a loaded gun in the house. He really didn't want it. So that wasn't happening. But to become an apprentice, an actual apprentice, what you have to do in New Hampshire is you capture a red-tailed hawk. It needs to be a bird of the year. It can't be an older bird. It needs to be a young bird because, you know, this way you may help the population right. instead of just deplete it. 80% of young hawks die in their first year. If you capture a red-tailed hawk for falconry, many of the falconers will release that bird at the end of the year and just let it fly free. And what you've done is given it a head start in life because normally 80% will not survive that first year. And to capture it, there's a whole system of stuff you need to do. I mean, first, you go to a place where you've seen hawks, and you get an unfortunate rodent who is going to need therapy after this, and you can put it under what's called a balchari, which looks kind of like a basket, but the hawk can see through it. It's got a lot of holes, and it has all these little Velcro-like loops on top of it. And the poor rodent is there. The hawk can see this very easily from 1,000 feet. They can see prey within a couple of miles. And it will come down to try to capture the rodent, and its talons will get stuck. Meanwhile, you're hiding in your car or in the bushes, and you rush out, and you detangle that bird, and then you take it home. That's how you get them. After you've got your falconry license, you can also actually order birds from breeders.
So what is the nature of this relationship? And, I mean, what's in it for the hawk? And what's in it for the falconer? It seems to me that, you know, us people, we're kind of opinionated. We want to dominate. But in a way, we are not at all dominated by
these animals. No, it's true. What is in it for the hawk is I might be able to scare up game just by crashing through the underbrush. And my big heavy feet will make some vole or squirrel rush out. And this is why hawks will even get over their aversion to dogs. Most hawks hate dogs and will scream at the dog, "You horrible thing, I hate you, go away, you're a dog." But once the dog points to game and once they make that connection, like, ooh, the dog's pointing the game. Now they don't want to hate the dog anymore. That doesn't mean that they have great affection for the dog, but it means that they will tolerate the dog. But as far as what is in this for the falconer, I wrote about that a little bit. Would you like me to read a piece
sure.
of that? This is what I found was the greatest gift of falconry. Just like friendships with different people, relationships with individuals of other species have lessons to teach us. We are, of course, deeply enriched simply by learning about life ways other than our own. I love it that some creatures I've been privileged to know can taste with their skin, octopuses, see with sound, dolphins and bats, and perceive colors that we can't even imagine, birds and reptiles. But animals also have much to show us about how we as humans can more meaningfully and compassionately encounter the wider world. Our fellow animals teach us lessons about the delights of sameness and difference. They immerse us in wonder. They lead us to humility. They inspire us to reverence. They teach us the many facets of love. The ancient Greeks said there were four kinds of love. The highest form of love was called agape. This is a love untainted by expectations, a love without external reward. In the Bible, agape came to stand for the love God has for his creation, for the love humans should endeavor to feel toward the Creator in worship. Agape asks nothing in return. This is what a hawk can teach you, how to love like a god.
with a fair amount of reluctance, I have to bring this to a close. This is such an amazing book, and you're not such an amazing writer, but also such an amazing person. And, you know, if you have small people in your life, by the way, there's a whole bunch of books that Zai has written, sometimes focusing on scientists that are doing stuff, written in a language that's more accessible for younger people. And then, of course, the prose that you've put together, whether it's The Good, Good Pig or, of course, The Soul of the Octopus.
Well, gosh, you know, you're in that book, Steve. One of the best scenes in Soul of an Octopus had Steve in it because he came with his crew to meet, it was Octavia.
Octavia, yes.
Yes. And Octavia pulled a fast one on us. All of us were there just lost in the excitement of touching her and feeding her. And we had this bucket of fish and we were handing her fish and it was sliding down her arms to her mouth because her mouth is in her armpits, of course. Where else would it be? So there was like six of us all around the tank and we're all like not just watching the octopus. Our hands are in the tank and the octopus. And then we thought, oh, you know what? Let's get another fish. And we look and like, where's the bucket? Do you have the bucket? No, I don't have the bucket. She had stolen the bucket of fish right from under, literally under our noses. That's how smart they are.
It's amazing. Such a hugely intelligent, sentient animal that looks nothing like the rest of us.
No. We last shared a common ancestor half a billion years ago when everybody was a tube.
Cy Montgomery's new book is The Hawk's Way. Thanks, Cy. I'm looking forward to your next one.
Great, Steve. Thank you.